So it's good to see you all back again. The Elephant Gajendra's Crisis. The second, third and fourth chapters of this canto describe how the Lord, during the reign of the fourth Manu, gave protection to the king of the elephants. As described in the second chapter, when the king of the elephants, along with his female elephants, was enjoying in the water, a crocodile suddenly attacked him and the elephant surrendered to the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead for protection. In the midst of the ocean of milk, there is a very high and beautiful mountain that has an altitude of 10,000 yojanas, or 80,000 miles. This mountain is known as Trikuta. In a valley of Trikuta, there is a nice garden named Ritumat, which was constructed by Varuna, and in that area there is a very nice lake. One of the chief of the elephants, along with female elephants, went to enjoy bathing in that lake, and they disturbed the inhabitants of the water. Because of this, the chief crocodile in that water, who was very powerful, immediately attacked the elephant's leg. Thus, there ensued a great fight between the elephant and the crocodile. This fight continued for 1,000 years. Neither the elephant nor the crocodile died, but since they were in the water, the elephant gradually became weak, whereas the power of the crocodile increased more and more. Thus, the crocodile became more and more encouraged. Then the elephant, being helpless and seeing that there was no other way for his protection, sought shelter at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sukadeva Goswami said, "My dear king, there is a very large mountain called Trikuta. It is 10,000 yojanas, 80,000 miles high. Being surrounded by the ocean of milk, it is very beautifully situated. The length and breadth of the mountain are of the same measurement, 80,000 miles. Its three principal peaks, which are made of iron, silver and gold, beautify all directions and the sky. The mountain also has other peaks which are full of jewels and minerals and are decorated with nice trees, creepers and shrubs. The sounds of the waterfalls on the mountain create a pleasing vibration. In this way, the mountain stands, increasing the beauty of all directions. The ground at the foot of the mountain is always washed by the waves of milk that produce emeralds all around in eight directions. The inhabitants of the higher planets, the Siddhas, Charanas, Gandharvas, Vidyadharas, Serpents, Kanadas and Apsaras go to that mountain to sport. Thus all the caves of the mountain are full of the denizens of the heavenly planets. Because of the resounding vibrations of the denizens of heaven singing in the caves, the lions there, being very proud of their strength, roar with unbearable envy, thinking that another lion is roaring in that way. The valleys beneath Trikuta Mountain are very beautifully decorated by many varieties of jungle animals, and in the trees, which are maintained in gardens by the demigods, varieties of birds chirp with sweet voices. Trikuta Mountain has many lakes and rivers with beaches covered by small gems resembling grains of sand. The water is as clear as crystal, and when the demigod damsels bathe in it, their bodies lend fragrance to the water and the breeze, thus enriching the atmosphere. In a valley of Trikuta Mountain, there was a garden called Ritumat. This garden belonged to the great devotee Varuna and was a sporting place for the damsels of the demigods. Flowers and fruits grew there in all seasons. Among them were mandaras, parijatas, betalas, ashokas, champakas, chutas, pialas, banasas, mangoes, amritakas, kramukas, coconuts, trees, date trees, and pomegranates. There were mandukas, palm trees, tamals, asanas, arjunas, aristas, udumbaras, plaxas, banyan trees, kimshukas, and sandalwood trees. There were also pitumadas, kubidaras, saralas, sudadaras, grapes, sugar cane, bananas, jambu, badadis, akshas, abayas, and amalakis. In that garden there was a very large lake filled with shining golden lotus flowers. And the flowers known as Kamuda, Kalara, Utpala, and Satapatra, which added excellent beauty to the mountain. There were also Bilba, Kapita, Jambira, and Balataka trees. Intoxicated bumblebees drank honey and hummed with the chirping of the birds, whose songs were very melodious. The lake was crowded with swans, karandavas, chakavakas, cranes, and flocks of water chickens, tatuhas, koyastis, and murmuring birds. Because of the agitating movements of the fish and tortoises, the water was decorated with pollen that had fallen from the lotus flowers. The lake was surrounded by kadamba flowers, vitasa flowers, nalas, nipas, panjulakas, kundas, kurubakas, ashokas, shirishas, kutajas, ingudas, kubjakas, svanutis, nagas, punnagas, jatis, malikas, satapatras, jalakis, and madavilatas. The banks were also abundantly adorned with varieties of trees that yielded flowers and fruits in all seasons. Thus, the entire mountain stood gloriously decorated. The leader of the elephants who lived in the forest of the mountain, Trikuta, once wandered toward the lake with his female elephants. He broke many plants, creepers, thickets and trees, not caring for their piercing thorns. Simply by catching scent of that elephant, all the other elephants, the tigers and the other ferocious animals such as lions, rhinoceroses, great serpents and black and white sarvas fled in fear. The chamari deer also fled. By the mercy of this elephant, animals like foxes, wolves, buffaloes, bears, boars, kupuchas, porcupines, monkeys, rabbits and other deer and many other small animals loitered elsewhere in the forest. They were not afraid of him. Surrounded by the herd's other elephants, including females, and followed by the young ones, Gajapati, the leader of the elephants, made Trikuta Mountain tremble all around because of the weight of his body. He was perspiring. Liquor dripped from his mouth and his vision was overwhelmed by intoxication. He was being served by bumblebees who drank honey, and from a distance he could smell the dust of the lotus flowers which was carried from the lake by the breeze. Thus surrounded by his associates who were afflicted by thirst, he soon arrived at the bank of the lake. The king of the elephants entered the lake, bathed thoroughly and was relieved of his fatigue. Then, with the aid of his trunk, he drank the cold, clear nectarian water, which was mixed with the dust of lotus flower and water lilies until he was fully satisfied. Like a human being who lacks spiritual knowledge and is too attached to the members of his family, the elephant, being illusioned by the external energy of Krishna, had his wives and children bathe and drink the water. Indeed, he raised water from the lake with his trunk and sprayed it over them. He did not mind the hard labour involved in this endeavour. By the arrangement of Providence, O King, a strong crocodile was angry at the elephant and attacked the elephant's leg in the water. The elephant was certainly strong and he tried his best to get free from this danger sent by Providence. Thereafter, seeing Gajendra in that grave condition, his wives felt very, very sorry and began to cry. The other elephants wanted to help Gajendra, but because of the crocodile's great strength, they could not rescue him by grasping him from behind. O King, the elephant and the crocodile fought in this way, pulling one another in and out of the water for 1,000 years. Upon seeing the fight, the demigods were very surprised. Thereafter, because of being pulled into the water and fighting for many long years, the elephant became diminished in his mental, physical, and sensual strength. The crocodile, on the contrary, being an animal of the water, increased in enthusiasm, physical strength, and sensual power. I'll just come back to these purports. When the king of the elephants saw that he was under the clutches of the crocodile by the will of Providence and being embodied and circumstantially helpless, could not save himself from danger. He was extremely afraid of being killed. He consequently thought for a long time and finally reached the following decision. So that'd be very, very difficult, because not only is he about to be killed, but he's about to be killed in front of his family, you know, while he's, you know, in the midst of, you know, the most pleasurable situation. So, you know, it'd be a terrible, you know, jolt of, you know, reality and fear. The other elephants, who were my friends and relatives, could not rescue me from this danger. What then speak of my wives? They cannot do anything. It is by the will of Providence that I have been attacked by this crocodile, and therefore I shall seek shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is always the shelter of everyone, even great personalities. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is certainly not known to everyone, but he is very powerful and influential. Therefore, although the serpent of eternal time, which is fearful in force, endlessly chases everyone, ready to swallow him, if one who fears this serpent seeks the shelter of the Lord gives him protection, for even death runs away in fear of the Lord. I therefore surrender unto him the great and powerful supreme authority, who is the actual shelter of everyone. So just a quick summary of these purports. So in that purport number 30 about the elephant, you know, the crocodile was on his own home ground, and therefore he was on strong ground, where the elephant was not on his strong ground, so he was losing strength. So Srila Prabhupada says, now from this we may take the lesson that in our fight with Maya, we should not be in a position in which our strength, enthusiasm and senses will be unable to fight vigorously. Our Krishna consciousness movement has actually declared war against the illusory energy in which all the living entities are rotting in a false understanding of civilization. The soldiers in this Krishna consciousness movement must always possess physical strength, enthusiasm and sensual power. To keep themselves fit, they must therefore place themselves in a normal condition of life. What constitutes a normal condition will not be the same for everyone, and therefore there are divisions of Varnashram. Especially in this age of Kali Yuga, it is advised that no one take sannyas. From this we can understand that in this age the sannyas ashram is forbidden because people are not strong. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed us an example in taking sannyas at the age of 24 years, but even Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya advised Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to be extremely careful because he had taken sannyas at an early age. For preaching, we give young boys sannyas, but actually it is being experienced that they are not fit for sannyas. There is no harm, however, if one thinks that he is unfit for sannyas. If he is very much agitated sexually, he should go to the ashram where sex is allowed, namely Grihastha Ashram. That one has been found to be very weak in one place does not mean that he should stop fighting the crocodile of Maya. One should take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, as we shall see Gajendra do, and at the same time one can be a Grihastha if he is satisfied with sexual indulgence. There is no need to give up the fight. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore recommended, Stanisthita Shuti Gatam Tanuvan Manobi. One may stay in whichever ashram is suitable for him. It is not essential that one take sannyas. If one is sexually agitated, he can enter the Grihastha ashram, but one must continue fighting. For one who is not in a transcendental position, to take sannyas artificially is not a very great credit. If sannyas is not suitable, one may enter the Grihastha ashram and fight Maya with great strength, but one should not give up fighting and go away. Now, of course, You know, at the time of Prabhupada writing this, one of Srila Prabhupada's sannyasis, who was working in this part of the world, fell down from sannyas. Now, we discussed this in, you know, Nirmala asked a lot of questions about this, and you know, previously, that, you know, our son, because, you know, sannyasi, one who takes sannyas, in the previous canto, we heard that one takes sannyas and then again becomes attracted to, you know, family life, is called vantasi. And we were discussing that from, you know, without the bhakti background, you know, that's a very dangerous position. You know, why even maintain one's body in one sense? Here Prabhupada gives, as we said, a different instruction. That if one takes sannyas and finds that one is not able to, he says, for preaching we give young boys sannyas, but actually it is being experienced that they are not fit for sannyas. So he's describing that some of his sannyasis fell down. There is no harm, however, if one thinks that he is unfit for sannyas. So someone's taken sannyas and fallen down. If he is very much agitated sexually, he should go to the ashram where sex is allowed, namely Grihastha ashram. See? So if a sannyas in ISKCON falls down, they should become Grihastha. They should not, you know, there's no need for them to give up their life. There's no need for them to give up their fight with Maya. There's no need for them to go away. They should simply go to that ashram where they fight with Maya. They should not stop fighting with Maya. That continues. They just do it, in, you know, where they're stronger. So that's how we deal with sannyasis in ISKCON, because of the bhakti, you know, that they can fight with Maya from the platform, you know, okay, sannyas didn't work, become a grihastha, keep that fight with Maya, and they become victorious over Maya, they'll go back to Godhead. And they're also fighting Maya on behalf of so many conditioned souls. They'll go back to God and they'll take so many with them. They don't stop. So very, very important. And this wonderful statement by Prabhupada, the soldiers in this Krishna consciousness movement must always possess physical strength, enthusiasm and sensual power. You see? And this physical strength. We should not work devotees to the point where they've become physically incapable. You know, we actually have to, engage. This is what we're talking about. You know, everyone should be active, but not to the point where it's destroying their health, mentally or physically. You know, there's a very strong statement here. Krishna consciousness must be there. But here he's saying, you know, always possess physical strength. Because, you know, if you're going to be actively engaged, if it's an important part of devotional service to be actively engaged, and you don't have the physical strength to do so, it makes a problem, doesn't it? It's okay if you're a paramahamsa and you can just chant Hare Krishna and it doesn't matter, you just stay in the one spot, or I can't do active service. I'll just chant Hare Krishna, read the Bhagavatam. It doesn't bother them, fair enough. But, you know, a young person, middle-aged person, who can no longer actively engage because they've burnt themselves out physically, you know, they've got a problem because they need to be actively engaged. See? So, you know, it's physical strength, enthusiasm and sensual power. All the senses of the body. So, you know, it's a very, very important statement. That's not Maya. That's to help you in the fight against Maya. So then here in the next purport, you know, Now, Gajendra is an interesting one because Prabhupada quotes this verse 7:16, right, that there are four types of persons who surrender to Krishna, one in danger, one in need of money, one in search of knowledge, and one who is inquisitive, right? So Gajendra is an example of one in danger. Such a decision, so he decided to surrender to the Lord, but such a decision is not reached by a sinful man. And of course, that's why in Bhagavad Gita it says, you know, that one who's acted piously in this life and previous lives, you know, they can engage in devotional service, you know, with determination. Without that, you know, and that's why it's important for us to, you know, as we're discussing with Manu, that people may not directly engage in Krishna consciousness, but they should still be encouraged by the Krishna consciousness movement to live a pious life and a sin-free life. See? They may not engage in Krishna consciousness, but you know, we're still teaching them, don't kill the cow. You know? So the governments, if they have that background, that there's no killing of cows, that's very helpful. That pious background helps a person to come to that decision in danger to surrender to Krishna. And that lack of piety goes against it. So we are encouraging piety, at least. You know, if you're not going to come to Krishna consciousness, that's okay. But at least the governments of the world stop encouraging slaughterhouses. Okay, you don't want to be a devotee? Fine. But we're still asking you, stop slaughtering the cows. Stop intoxication and brothels and this and that and so many things. Okay. So, then in this purport here, you know, this... we understand that this world is basically a, you know, very dangerous world, and that, you know, basically those who don't surrender to Krishna, they're basically, they're all duskritinas. Duskritina means they're impious persons. They may have a lot of intelligence and ability, but they're impious and they don't come to that conclusion that even in this dangerous world I should surrender to the Lord. And then in this, you know, final purport, just quickly, that he does surrender to the personality of Godhead. And one must know that, you know, one should surrender to the personality of Godhead because he's capable of protecting everyone, because he's the controller of this whole world, including death itself. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. And we'll see you next week for chapter 3.
What do we have?
Govardhan Puja next week on the Saturday. And what time is that? 4 o'clock. Mm. And I guess I'll be doing all sorts of things in here. And
yeah.
They take it. Huh?
Yeah.
Let me, Govardhan Puja. So, for instance, if we...